If you were a flavor of soup, what flavor would you be?
I did actually just earlier this week make a sweet potato pumpkin coconut curry soup that I feel captures my essence on a spiritual level.
That's really cool. I think I would be maybe like a cookie dough ice cream that's been left out on the countertop for maybe a couple hours. I think that counts.
That's a soup, yeah.
That's a soup.
It's a liquid in a bowl.
Okay, question number two. If you were to find $6, six untaxable dollars, what would you spend it on?
I'd buy, I think, two king-size Take 5 bars you could get for $6 with tax.
Ooh, I would definitely get one of the, I think I would get a 40-gram protein shake.
Okay.
Those are usually $6, five or six. And they're worth it. Okay. Now you get to ask me a cool kid question.
Okay. If you fell in love with a French fry, what shape of fry would it be?
Oh my fucking God. That's great. I think it would be, the a really crisp classic fry, not a waffle fry, no julienne, just the classic,
just like straightforward down the middle,
yeah,
like McDonald's style, or like
I would say more like a fresh cut from the Minnesota State Fair.
Sure,
style.
Sure.
There have to be vinegar nearby as well. I need that to be bitter and mean, a little bit of and too hot for my mouth.
Yep. Okay. That tracks.
Yeah, that's a fucking incredible question, and it's way better than the question I prompted my Tinder match to ask me after I gave him those first two questions. That's so validating. I was like, that's not a good question, right? Yeah, no, that's not a cool kid question.
Are you going to say what it was on the air?
Yes.
Okay. What did they reply with?
If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Fucking flight or invisibility.
Thank you. Like, oh my God.
It's all anyone's going to pick.
No, actually, no, it doesn't matter. Like, but the way you looked was just like, mm-hmm. No, I actually would pick regeneration and healing.
Actually, that's not bad.
I'm like, fuck being sick.
You know, especially,
or hurt.
Yeah, getting older. Yeah. Like, Wolverine regeneration sounds not bad.
Yeah. That's what I would do. I mean, it's like a superpower is sort of a fantasy technology, right? And what's really the most profitable technology?
Healthcare.
That's okay. But yes, I was like that. It was doomed from that. That conversation was doomed.
So unimaginative.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Sorry. That's just how it is dating. I'm sure you're not familiar with that, having been engaged for some time.
I remember what it was like down there in the match mines. It was not great.
It's not great. Not great. Oh, well. I suppose that has nothing to do with the content of this episode. Because I certainly didn't get boned. It's only skulls coming at us. And we throw knives at them. On Storm Buds.
Buds, storm of buds. And we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome to Storm Bones. That's the sound of your bones rattling after hearing our bone-chilling introduction.
That's the sound of all the bones coming after you. It's the sound of the bones that are behind you.
Oh, well, this is Storm Buds, but we are in the month of October, and we are playing all games related to bones, or with bones in them. Actually, these all have bones in them.
Yes.
This one is pretty straightforward. We are a video game club podcast, and we play two games a week. It's getting to be a bit much. Fine, being honest with you.
We could rethink some of the format.
We are going to make it through the rest of the year and then think about our future. But for now, it's still fun. We as hinted to repeatedly, today we are playing the game. Well, we are talking about the game Devil Daggers. And in the latter half of the episode, we are doing our finale, ? Of Diablo 4.
Not the expansion. Or is it?
No, we're talking about the end of the Diablo 4 base game. And then, of course, next week we're talking Vessel of Hatred, which we've been playing all month to try and sink our teeth into this pretty large game. But on the other side of the spectrum, we've got Devil Daggers, a very small, very lean game.
Alex, go ahead and tell us about what Devil Daggers is, who made it, all sorts of stuff around it.
Sure thing. Okay. So Devil Daggers comes out in 2016, which is crazy to me. In my head, it came out in like 2019. I think time has just been passing very fast.
What?
This game came out in 2016.
I was like, oh yeah. Well, like, as soon as I loaded this game, I was like, oh yeah, I saw this on social media a couple years ago.
Yeah, exactly. No, okay, look, I picked Devil Daggers for two reasons for this week, okay? Reason number one, I knew that we had, like, a big week planned, especially with all the Diablo stuff and recording being tricky and all of that, and I was like, something lean and fast that we can just get in and get out of. Reason number two, this podcast basically dictates all of my gaming this time, at this point, like, you know, because I don't have time for much else, and I was like, I would play some fucking Devil Daggers, so I'm gonna put it on the list, and that way I can play it for content.
I respect that so much. I respected it so much, I agreed to it.
What it is, oh, where to start with this? It is a first-person shooter. It is a high-score chasing game. It is extremely simple. You are in a black void on a small illuminated platform. You pick up a magic dagger that lets you shoot a stream of continuous daggers from your fingers, and demonic skeletal things spawn in continuously around you and attempt to kill you, starting with a lot of human skulls and giant Diablo skulls and weird floating squid things, going on to large spiders and centipedes and lots of other things that all spawn in with increasing frequency and all sort of begin to fill the arena with increasingly sort of like erratic, chaotic movement as you try and carve your way through with your little stream of daggers that you spew out of your fingers and stay alive. And it is a game about staying alive as long as you can. Mm-hmm. There is no like real other score tracking. It is just time. And for some context, I am currently sixth on my Steam friends leaderboard out of like 24 people, and my best time is about 90 seconds. So it is very hard to stay along. It's very hard to stay alive for even 45 to 60 seconds in this game. It gets very chaotic very quickly, and it is a one-hit kill. So if anything in the game collides with you, you are immediately at done, and you can hit reset, and you're right back in it. And this game grabs me by the brain and doesn't let me go for like 45 to 60 minutes at a time.
Wow, that long.
Yeah, I will just keep hitting reset and keep hitting reset and keep hitting reset. And I think it's because there's a couple, I think, really smart design decisions in this game. The first of which is that it is not actually random. It is not like it is not a roguelike in any way. Rather, there is a preset sort of set of enemies that will spawn in at different times. And what that means is that you can learn what is coming and you can develop strategies for how to deal with things in a very sort of like, you know, thoughtful way. Actually, we were talking earlier this month about Castlevania 4, and I was talking about sort of modern games that rely on learning a very precise sort of sequence and then executing on it. This is one of the games that I had in mind. In a similar way, I felt to the way that to get through a Castlevania level, what you're really doing is sort of being like, okay, it's going to be the Medusa head here, then I have to hit the skeleton guy there, then I got to make this jump, then I got to make that jump, then I got to hit the second skeleton guy. This game also is about sort of like, okay, I've got these four waves of squids spawning in skulls first, then I've got the spider comes in, then I have the bigger squid that's going to come in, and you start to figure out strategies, because this game looks retro in a way that looks kind of like Quake or something, but it doesn't actually demand a lot of precision with the reticle, at least from the player. At least I don't think so. More than sort of precise shooting, what it's really a game about is kind of wave management. It is about sort of staying on the move and managing to continue to clear out waves of enemies as they come in and stay one step ahead of them and have the situational awareness to know sort of what the biggest threat is at any given time, while also keeping an eye on the long-term goals, which tends to be like getting to the edge of the arena and taking out the spawner enemies before they can spawn in even more stuff to make your day even worse. So I don't know, and it's got a lot of really clever little mechanics. Like, for example, some enemies drop these red gemstones, and if you pick up 10 of the red gemstones, you can get a weapons upgrade that will cause you to deal more damage. But They're hard to pick up on the fly, but if you stop firing, they gravitate towards you naturally, which means that there's almost like a push-pull type thing where what you actually want to be doing is, rather than firing continuously, you want to be firing to buy yourself some space, then letting off the fire so that all the power-up gemstones can like gravitate towards you, then resuming firing again to like to create more space. Like you get this kind of stop-and-go rhythm to it that, when you balance it properly, feels really good, and when you don't bounce it properly, causes a giant Diablo skull to just smash into you and drive a horn through your skull, and game over.
Well, that's about what I understood from this game in my shorter time playing it. This game, I will say, is it's a lean, mean first person shooter sort of machine, very arcade style game. This isn't a kind of game that has any sort of story or context or barely an aesthetic apart from just brown skulls kind of and red gems
and good creepy sound design.
The sound is good, it definitely, I just kind of bounced right off it. I said, oh, okay. I think maybe I lasted 20 or 30 seconds at most. I personally just didn't care to get better at that. I know this game has like a really big cult following as well. This is just one of those games where it's like, oh, I'm not in this cult. This one's not for me. I'm into plenty of other cult games that I know just kind of are. They do what they do really well, and this game does what it wants to do really well, and literally nothing else. It is not.
Yeah, no, there's nothing else going on.
There's no any sort of package, anything other than that. So if you want to do that, if you want to Devil Dagger, then go ahead and Devil Dagger. You will get it. It does not deceive you in any way. It's not like it's telling you that there's this grand epic thing and behind it, and there's not. You know, it's not.
Yeah, no, there's no lore. There's no secret, like, Easter egg you're going to unlock that reveals why you're in this hell dimension.
Background art. There's no.
No, not really. I mean, look, this game is $10 on Steam. I think that is appropriately priced.
Yeah, no, it's not even. There's no, like, and the progression is very linear. It is just sort of one thing. It's not like a Castlevania where you can get different items and explore the map to try and find different secrets or anything like that. It's not like Vampire Survivors where there's upgrade trees or any sort of thing going in from run to run to run. That's nothing like that at all. It is just a pure examination of your Devil Dagger in skill. Are you good at this one? Are you really, really good at this one obstacle course?
You're in an arena. There are a lot of skulls trying to kill you. That is it.
Yep. And that is not my jam personally, but I respect the craft. Hopefully I come off respectful.
Yes. I mean, frankly, that is all I wanted to say about Devil Daggers. I think if you look up a trailer of this game and it looks cool, you should play it. Again, it's $10. But we don't need to talk too much more about it because we have a lot of Diablo to talk about.
Yeah. That's, I think, about gonna do it for our discussion there. Check it out. This is a lot of bones on theme. We made it. We are going to trade Pokemons. I finished my Paldea decks, so I'm gonna give him a boost. Give him a boost with the little stuff. I'm gonna make things right because I stole his grass type starter. Okay, so we'll do that. We'll do our customary ad break, and I will be right back. But not Alex. Oops.
We're gonna read some ads.
Well, Jerome, you know, I imagine if our audience is anything like you and me, they've got a lot of anxiety on their mind here about this upcoming U.S. election season.
Uh-oh.
It's certainly a stressful time to be living through.
Yeah.
But that's why this week we're encouraging people to lighten up and find some fun in the great American civic process by betting with Poll Vault.
Oh boy, that's a genius. That's so good. Tell us more about Poll Vault.
Well, you know, thanks to a recent ruling by a Washington court, betting on elections is now totally legal in the U.S. That's not a bit for the ad. That's real. That actually happened.
So good.
So you no longer need to send your Bitcoin to an offshore account operated by a website that looks like it was made in 2007. You can use your hard-earned American dollars and make a friendly little wager on all the upcoming races up and down the ballot.
To be fair, that's what's been happening. That's what's been happening under the board anyway.
Now, if you want to play it safe, you can stick with easy bets, of course. You can put down $5 on Harris winning or and get back six if she does. Or now, if you want to play it safe, you can stick with the easy bets, of course. Put down $5 on Harris winning, get back six if she does. Maybe put down $10 on Ted Cruz losing Texas and afford yourself a date night with the Mr. or Mrs. But for listeners who crave a little more excitement in their gambling entertainment, Pole Vault is offering a special multi-parlay sequence with potentially astronomical payouts. Put down just $500 US. And if Donald Trump wins Georgia, but Kamala Harris wins Montana, and Jill Stein wins the general election with 276 electoral votes, why, that $500 could be worth as much as $526,000.
Wow.
It's a long shot, but remember, it only has to happen once, and it could happen to you.
Hey, you're not a character, right? You're Alex?
I'm Alex.
Okay, can you step with me into the town portal for a sec? We're going to step out of the money realm.
Yep.
There are so many ways in which this bit is going to age terribly.
No, I know.
No, there are so many. Like, if any of that either happens or does not happen, this bit is, we're doomed. We're screwed.
We're
right?
Screwed.
We're totally
screwed. Our reputation
will
be tarnished.
They're gonna think that we're soothsayers here. People are gonna sign up for this service. No, they're just gonna do it. Like, this isn't. Here's the thing. This isn't. I mean, Pole Vault is a service, right? But like, this is something that everyone is gonna do.
Yeah, no, I'm aware that we live in hell and okay. That I am merely anticipating the terrible contours of what is to come.
But like, what's the bite here, right? What's the bite of this bit? I know you're mad that this is happening. And there are any number of ridiculous outcomes. But what's the bite? What are we getting out of this?
What we're getting out of this is that actually what I really hate is all these fucking sports gambling apps that are running these multi-parlay setups and taking people's money based off of insane chains of probability that are never going to happen.
Oh, I see. So, all right. Yeah. Cool. So do we run Pole Vault? Is that...
No, we're just taking a cut of everyone who signs up with the store.
Oh, this is a sweet deal. It's like a flat cut. Oh my God, this contract. You handed me this contract.
Right, right. No, there's so much money. There's so much money in the gambling industry.
All right, fuck that. Let's go back in the portal. Wow, I can't wait to sign up for Pole Vault immediately.
Sign up for Pole Vault right now and make your first bets on your local school board races for a chance to earn up to $25 in free bets that can only be used within the app within 24 hours.
Holy cow. You never know who could win the school board elections. You could write anyone in.
It could be the Monopoly Man.
It could be Kamala Harris again.
She could win in the 4th district and then get fired by Brandon Johnson.
Oh, man. It could be Rachel Dolezal. She's back.
somehow Rachel Dolezal returned.
You can put anything you want. You can put as much money as you want. There is no cap on betting with Pole Vault.
Remember, the great thing about gambling is that anything, no matter how improbable, could technically happen.
So sign up now, www.polevault.com/stormbuds, and you can get our sweet Stormbuds themed gambling portal.
Yeah, it's got like a little skin and everything. It's got our little avatars.
Yeah, it's got our little avatars there. It's got when you make a successful bet, it's got the me dancing emote. And then if you just happen to maybe not make a successful bet, it'll have the one where you're dead next to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's all on brand.
It's all on brand. That's polevault.com, just polevault.com/stormbuds.
You got really into that one.
Well, yeah, as soon as I heard we got an infinite cut. Okay, we're back. All has been made right with the world. Alex has a Sprigatito. There was one. I was trading it with him.
I finally got an ice cue.
And an ice cue. That was the greatest surprise. But there
I've
was one.
Begging I had, you for an ice cue for weeks. I've said, Jerome, get me one, please.
Yeah, he knew what one was. I think it was really destiny because I had bred a bunch of them just, you know, in the off chance that I got a shiny. I didn't. But
sorry, you bred a bunch of ice cue in the off chance you got a shiny?
No, I just caught a bunch of Ice Cube and then used them as trade fodder because it's funny.
Got it.
But
that makes more sense.
Yeah, no, I bred a bunch of Sprigatito in case I got a shiny, and one of the Sprigatitos was just literally bouncing in the box, waiting to get to Alexander. So that is going to actually, sorry, it's waiting to go to Alan. Your name is Alan in Pokemon
with an E, which is what it's been,
Alan,
which is what it's been since I was 11 years old and didn't know how to spell the name Alan.
Why didn't you do Alex?
Because it's not me. It's my character. So
you have the privilege of having a four character name the SNES era and Game Boy era, and you didn't use it. My older brothers Alex and Nick took advantage of that every time, and I was just screwed.
Not a lot of really good options.
No. Oh well. We are now going to pivot into our discussion of the final two acts of Diablo 2. And oh boy, I warned you there long.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot happening here.
And again, I want to repeat, in case this is your first episode, how I feel about the story of this game is that if you rush through the story, you're kind of doing it a disservice. There's a lot to take in with the world, and I would really highly recommend going in, especially, I mean, if with the new season and all, I'd highly recommend going in and doing not as many, but at least a couple of the side quests along the way, just so you get a feel for the world and feel for the stakes. I think the side quests add a lot to the stakes of the story, and not so much like the characters in the story or the events that happen, but like the world itself. Like Sanctuary is super shitty to live in, but that is all that these people have, and all these people have is each other, and it's like, oh, now suddenly it's like it feels like it's worth kind of fighting for.
I will say, we'll talk more about it next week, but I'm feeling that also a lot more in Vessel of Hatred. I think the Vessel of Hatred makes a very strong impression with that world building stuff.
Yes, I think similarly, but yes, well, that's for next week. Today we start with Act 5, where we ride off to the city of Zarbenzet from the four. I've heard this now. Hold on, I got a correction in the email. We were at. I was previously saying the chapel name incorrectly and apparently inappropriately. That was on me. It's apparently pronounced. Fuck! I had a bit for this. It is apparently a chapel dedicated to the character from Street Fighter going off on a racing tour, the Forza Ken Chapel.
Yes, the Forza Ken Chapel.
Yeah, so he gets off in his what are those fancy cars and is driving through the sunset. So that's kind of like a hint to like a prior civilization. Very Final Fantasy of this game to do that.
Oh yeah, lots of lore about like, you know, the eternal recurrence in this
the
game.
Ancients. Yeah, the ancients and stuff. So we leave from the Forza Ken Chapel and we head to Zarbenzet. And Tysa tells us, she's tagging along this time, about somebody who may have an idea who has maybe an idea of why Elias is immortal. Elias being the Herodrim that we're chasing after, who is in cahoots with Lilith.
I'm gonna be honest here. I did not see where this was going. This takes a few swerves that I did not anticipate.
Yeah, I think I was in a similar position. We also need to. Does the thing where it splits us up into two paths, and you can do whatever you want, so that maybe it funnels out some of the people from loading in one zone and not being in the same whatever. The same thing that Final Fantasy XIV does. We need to imbue the Soul Stone with some essence of hatred, so that it is attuned to hatred and not whatever the hell Astaroth is attuned to. So there's a Zakaroom keep nearby that is perfect for it. And okay, now I've said the word Zakaroom again, and I need to clarify what the Zakaroom is. Because I think going to be very confusing going forward what the difference between the Zakaroom church is and the Cathedral of Light.
Please explain this.
Imagine the Zakaroom and the Cathedral of Light are two different sects of a light worshiping religion, if you could think of that. The Zakaroom is headed has a prophet figure in the name of Akarat.
Okay.
Think of Akarat as maybe a Moses or a Jesus.
Okay.
Like, Akarat is not literally the son of God, but he is kind of like a figurehead.
Chosen by God.
Yes. And we'll talk a lot more about him in Vessel of Hatred. For now, we're focused mostly in this expansion on on the Cathedral of Light, which is a sect started by Inarius himself to worship himself.
Yeah,
and the light, which is a very different thing. Akarat believes in a lightness that is innate to humanity. And the
Inarius believes in himself.
Yeah, Inarius believes in a light that is him and angels and heaven. So that's where they kind of differentiate themselves.
Okay, so just to clarify here, did you also go help Donan with the Soul Stone first, or did you go
I think I chose Donan's chapter first, yes.
Okay,
but anyway,
also.
So context here for Diablo 2, why would a church of light and innate lightness be a perfect place for fucking Mephisto's, well, or for hatred? Well, in the events, just prior to the events of the Diablo 2, the Zacharum Church did, in fact, fall to the machinations of Mephisto and become sort of a front for Mephisto worship and everything. And that is, it's really great that they're kind of touching in on this. And then we're going to go all those places in the expansion. But basically, the Zacharum Church also fell to corruption. Interesting pattern that they're kind of establishing.
Sanctuary, I don't know that any church makes it intact out of Sanctuary.
I chose Donan's chapter first, the Zekrom temple we gotta jungly gym our way into and open up. And
which Taisa also says that this temple is not part of Sanctuary, which, like, I couldn't tell if she was speaking like metaphysically or like,
I think maybe like metaphysically. The swamp is kind of it seems to be its own thing. And on the way there's some interesting notes about this paladin Karthus and his squire's journal and the futility of the light and all sorts of things, and the paladin being somebody who a long time ago felt Mephisto. The same paladin from Diablo 2. I could be wrong. Correct me in the Discord or the emails if I am. But it could be another time that Mephisto has felt. And we try at the bottom of the tomb of this cathedral here to attune to the soul stone, but the stone is damaged. Ah, dang it.
And it seems like it's damaged because we're fighting off demons, but what actually starts to become clear is that Donan seems to have a lot of performance anxiety.
We head off to a nearby alchemist to see if we can't get the MacGuff. I mean, the materials.
We go to nearby Swamp Village, and surprisingly enough, Swamp Village does not have what we need to repair a soul stone.
But they go talk to the witch nearby in the tower, who we learn is Taisa herself.
She's
kind of left us after she told us about Team Away. She's like, all right, well, have fun with that Soulstone shit. That's none of my business.
Her reaction also kind of seems to be like, oh, why are you here?
Like damn it, I told you this is none of my business.
She's as surprised to see us as we are to see her.
But we start making it her business. She eventually agrees to let us use her tools to help fix the Soulstone, but she has no Quicksilver. Her witch sister, Valtha, will have it. Yeah,
I should clarify here. I don't think we know it's her sister. I think we kill her because, like, we go to the witch.
She calls all her witches her sisters, right?
I suppose, but like
we learn about it in 2 seconds,
and the witch gets angry at us, and so fights us, and so we have to kill her, and then we get back to Tyson. And Tyson's like, "Oh, I was actually really close with her."
Well, yeah, but she was mad, but like. Now, she told us it was her sister. I wrote these notes in order as I was playing them. I didn't. So I'm pretty sure at this point we did know. And that's why we were like lured in, like, oh, we could trust this person. It's Tysa's sister. And then turns out, yeah, Valtha threw her lot in with Lilith because hatred is very seductive. And it's just ambition. It's like Lilith and Mephisto always come to these people and they talk about everyone else in their life. They're like, why are you hanging out with this person who's like getting in your way, right? Don't you hate how they do this and this? Because they can like read into your emotions about how other people. It's fucking great. And I love them and they're manipulative and they're so, it would totally work on me. And I don't love that about myself. It's like that coworker that comes in and starts kind of like with a DM with you and starts talking shit about somebody else. Or like if there's like developer issues and the QA team and the QA, they're like, man, this one developer, right? He's really getting in the way of everything he knows. And it's like, actually, that other QA guy's the problem who's being toxic. You know, like that's kind of what's happening here with them. They stir hatred within people.
I will also say, we're going to talk more about this in a bit here, but I am increasingly Team Lilith. I don't.
That's what this game's doing really well.
Like, I actually think that Lilith might kind of be correct about a lot of things, and like everyone else seems a little myopic.
Well, we'll get into that closer to the end of the episode. I think what this is, you're falling. You are also falling for her spell. And I'll tell
you. Maybe.
I will tell you what I think at the end, and I have a feeling I'm going to be pretty convincing.
Maybe. Okay, there's some scenes we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah,
okay.
But this game is kind of pushing us to see things from Lilith's point of view. The church is clearly not the answer. And also Lilith is fighting against a greater evil that is Mephisto. So maybe this would be a good opportunity for us. Well, anyway, we get what we need from Tysa, from Valtha's house after we take care of her. And Donan also, as you mentioned, fails the spell. Tysa offers to, and I have a note here, ... quote, help, quote. I don't know what joke I was making there, but I think I was making a joke about maybe a tuggy or something by leading him to a hut into the deep swamp to help him face his demons. Oh,
we're going
to
do the cave thing from Empire Strikes Back. He's going to wander.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, yeah, maybe she's like a hag or something. And then we're going to, because like now I can't trust anyone. That or she wants to give him a tuggy. We prepare the ritual, drink nasty ichor tea, and pass out. Ew.
And Donan gets to commune with the sun spirit.
Oh, love that. He has a lovely moment of grief. Yeah, and we see a cool fiery portal. Uh-oh.
Yeah, again, increasingly Mephisto just randomly dropping into things happening and being like, hey, come chat for a sec. Get over here.
Yeah, and he takes us to no other location than Travancol. Oh, man, I have a note. Oh, shit, because Travancol is, of course, as I mentioned, the site of the fall of the Church of Zakharum. It is a dungeon. It is a city that I have run through many, 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 many times at the end of Act 3 and Diablo 2, farming the High Council for legendaries. And then going down into the Durance of Hate for more legendaries. Wink, wink. Mephisto.
Just a place to me. I was just like, oh, cool. It's a place.
Yeah. Mephisto offers to free. Well, maybe you should play Diablo 2. And you're like, hey, this place. Mephisto offers to free us of the Haradrim. Tempting. And work with him to stop Lilith instead. Less tempting. I am all for it. I love Mephisto. I want to see more of him, even if it means my character is evil. No, I don't care about my allies that much. This option is way cooler. Yeah. Those are my notes.
Mephisto basically warns us not to take our eye off the Lilith ball and get too distracted by Elias. And he says, hey, you know, let them handle Elias. You and I can deal with Lilith alone. And we're like, no, we'll never team up with you.
I mean, he's right, and we shouldn't. But I want things to happen. I want bad and cool things to happen. So I was curious to see if this game was going to do that. It doesn't at that time. We head back and help Donan with the ritual in a cool scene where we hand him the tools and fix him the soul stone, and he does it.
He screams and beats the shit out of it, and that fixes it.
Yeah, that moment of grief was really, really cathartic for him. That or the tuggy. They will meet us at the temple while we goof to go find Timoe and stuff with this other folks.
Yep, we find the witch Timoe, who has the information we're looking for, and she tells us that Elias made a pact with the Tree of Whispers.
Uh-oh, yes.
Is the Tree of Whispers a thing from previous games?
No, this is new.
Okay, it's
sick.
We've
not been in this swamp in any game yet. Or okay. up in this like northern continent, really not so much. The only place we've been before is like Caldeum.
Got it.
Which we will get to later.
Okay. And there's a whole sequence here where we go into the snake swamp and we get the sacred incense that will lead us to the Tree of Whispers. And we light it and it gives us all a vision of a big ass snake.
This shit's so fucking cool. I fucking love this part of the game.
Like the snake is like a mile long. Like it's enormous.
It's enormous. It's absolutely massive. We're not sure if it's real or not. It's showing us visions in its scales as we're trying to see through, like follow through the maze of the swamp. The music in this zone is just like this whirling chanting, like but it keeps iterating and getting more and more intense the closer we get to the temple. I absolutely loved this sequence of the game. I thought it was really cool. I liked the I liked the whole serpent motif with the serpent's chambers and Rathma and stuff, and serpents being visionaries and connected to prophecies and knowledge. There's a lot of really neat connections in the world here, and I think this is like, yeah, just sort of tying back to what we learned about the prophecy in Act One, being like, okay, the serpent is working together with Rathma to give him knowledge. And I always can't help but wonder if Rathma also like had a hand in either creating or dealing with the Tree of Whispers very frequently. Maybe that's what he meant by the serpent when he was in the chambers, because I had a note in chapter one. I was like, what is the serpent? Now I'm like, I think I know what the serpent is.
It's like
is,
the only big serpent we encounter.
Yeah, well, I think the serpent is the Tree of Whispers, but he refers to him in his prophetic way as the serpent.
Well, because we follow the snake,
yeah,
and we get to the actual Tree of Whispers, which is a willow tree with a bunch of heads hanging from it.
So fucking cool.
It's so cool, and here's how it works. The Tree of Whispers does one thing. If you offer it your head as tribute, it will tell you a secret.
So cool.
Which I love that sort of, like, in a game that is full of magic, that's like, this lightning strike deals 38 plus 16 damage mm-hmm. over time. It's nice to have a match that's just like, and this magic is, you will learn a secret.
I will cast the identify spell that is no longer in the game. I know the magic of the Scrolls of Town Portal.
So the Tree of Whispers is pretty upset because Elias came here and he got his secret, and then he reneged on the bet and didn't give the tree his head. So,
yeah. That's some pretty bullshit, because again, Elias not dying, turns out. But the secret that Elias learned, did we learn what the secret was?
Yeah, the secret is
how to summon Lilith.
Where he can go to find immortality. And
no, how to summon Lilith. He learned how to find immortality elsewhere, right?
I thought the secret was
how to summon Lilith, wasn't it?
Maybe. I thought the secret that he learned was to go to the coffin on the Rex in order to find immortality. Or maybe you're right. Maybe they did. Maybe he learned how to summon Lilith, and he just
is being a necro. He's just has a phylactery and knows about it from Haradrimbal. Because, like, why would the tree offer to tell him how to get out of the bargain?
I suppose that's right. No, I think you're right. I think the tree just
Elias
knows.
Did not know where to find Lilith in the first place.
Yeah, the tree just knows that he went to the coffin. Or
the
whatever.
Necromancy and the phylactery that he's got is basically. Spoilers for whatever.
Anyway, we make a bargain with the tree, not for our head, but just be like, hey, tell us where Elias went and we'll kill him and you can have the head that you're owed. And at that point, the tree is like, yes, he went to the coffin on the Rex. That is the secret of his immortality.
Yeah, there's something there that the tree cannot see.
Yes.
That's exactly right. So if the tree actually doesn't even know that that place is there, how could it possibly have given him that secret? So very deep down, this sequence is wild. Once we escape the tree, we finally bother Lorath enough to tell us what happened with him and Elias. He just went mad when he heard the prophecy, basically. Nothing special, but, like, okay, great.
Yeah, they played this big reveal of, like, Lorath, like, what was the secret history between the two of you? And Lorath's like, he started to go crazy, and I didn't stop him. And it's like, you could have told us that at any time.
I'm increasingly less and less compelled by Lorath.
I agree.
As the story goes on. But I'm more and more compelled by Nayrel, who gets bit by a zombie and is infected, and we have to cauterize and amputate her arm.
Yep.
Yikes. But she does it while crawling into her hole, a hole, you know, her usual thing, and we're like, oh, this'll be fine. Turns out it finally wasn't. Damn. Lorath vows to make her a Haradrim at this point, and I was like, maybe you shouldn't. Then maybe, like, that's like rubbing salt in the wound. Fucking asshole. We reach the coffin and Dark Souls it the hell up, just sealing ourselves in.
It's like the Dark Souls gender change coffin, only we come out the same.
Yeah, and the coffin becomes waterlogged with us inside, and we end up in a place called Epiphysis.
So we get in this, to clarify, this is a large coffin and a bunch of wrecked ships on the coast. This coffin's just hanging out there. Mm-hmm. And you get in it, and then it closes on you, and then it drops into the water and plunges you down into a different, like, subterranean realm.
Called Epiphysis.
Epiphysis. Temple of Rathma.
This is Rathma's other temple. Some more serpent stuff, motifs, whatever. Elias comes to the conclusion. We have visions of Elias, right?
Visions of Elias discovering that the only being willing to stand against the eternal conflict in the prime evils was Lilith. Like, what she is telling him is that her whole goal is like, look, this whole fight between heaven and hell that results in, like, you know, all of this sort of, like, you know, destruction, misery in Sanctuary has got to come to an end. That's what she's telling him.
Yeah, but, like, to what end, right? Like, does she actually want the conflict to be over, or does she want to rule everything? She is still, I remind you, an aspect of hatred. She is not exactly a keen-headed thing. I do think she has a right vision for the future of Sanctuary and the future of existence as it is, but I don't think she's the right person to carry it out, given her tendencies to just kill everything around her. and cause hatred and strife everywhere.
Like, so at the bottom of the dungeon, I disagree, but at the bottom of the dungeon, we find Elias's finger, which he left here to remain immortal. As long as some part of his body remained in this place, he would be immortal. And so we pick it up and get drowned out of the whole thing. And then we're just like, hey, let's throw that finger on the campfire and incinerate it. And we do.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, Elias tried to outsmart the tree with the immortality. Not a good idea. We did it. Nothing like, it's like no big thing happens. Like, all right, we burnt the finger. I guess we'll get out. We all meet at the temple and we do the soul stone ritual again. But Elias is here and we chase after him. Finally,
Elias, interestingly enough, does not realize at first that he's no longer immortal.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. It's like, oh yeah, like nothing big explosion he happened. He just is like, but it's because that the place he stored the finger, I guess, is like outside of the realm of.
He didn't think anyone would find it.
Yeah, he didn't think anyone would find it. And he can't, maybe he literally can't observe it.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Possibly. Or didn't think to, whatever. So we wound him, and he's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm not regenerating. He runs away. We catch up.
There's a bit here where when he first runs off, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, we're dealing with this guy for like two more acts, but no. We catch up with him, and...
We finish the deed, basically, with an annoying raven looking on. Oh, uh-oh. Oh, no. That raven is gigantic. And it's the one by the tree that was collecting heads before. Oh, okay, I see. It's collecting its head, and it's doing it with some excellent sound design. It is collecting it right off that body, going...
Well, and Elias, before he dies here, says, when hell sweeps across the world, Lilith and I shall push it back. And that's the first moment where I was like...
But Lilith is hell.
But also, like, she's very clearly genuinely in conflict with hell and doesn't like hell and seems to have an antagonistic relationship to hell. Like,
mm-hmm. It's true. But she also is turning Sanctuary into hell and doing what she's doing. Right?
I guess.
Like,
I guess
really
if you
want to
be technical.
If you really want to be technical. Yeah, so it's not exactly the ideal solution. But Elias, I don't know, is a Haradrim. And Haradrim don't think things through. That's so, I love it. That's why I'm like, yeah, watch these idiots just do things that they know are, like, they don't know are bad for them. Because, well, there'll be more of that as we get into Act 6.
Yeah, because what happens here is, so we've attuned the Soul Stone, but we think that Lilith is already at the gate to hell, and yeah, we don't know where that is.
And hot on her heels is the Cathedral of Light.
Yes, and Lorath is like, there's no time. We have to find out where she is. I'll go offer my own head to the Tree of Whispers in exchange for finding out where she's at.
This part was really stupid. I was like, really? Like,
really?
You couldn't have
no
just,
other ways?
You couldn't have deduced it? Done some sort of scouting?
Yeah, again, this felt very contrived.
I was like, I don't... Sure, yeah, he wants to hang out with his lover, Elias.
There's a few bits here. Bits of the story are starting to work better for me. But mm-hmm. there are a few things here like this. Like, Nyrell, like, losing her arm is good, but it kind of happens out of nowhere. And there's, like, an upcoming death as well that also comes completely out of nowhere. Where I'm kind of like... It feels like there's not a lot of dramatic structure to a lot of what's happening.
I'm trying to think about, like, what losing an arm kind of means. Like, obviously, it comes out of nowhere, but, like, what does her not having the ability to use that arm mean anymore? And I think when it comes to the expansion, like, it's really effective in helping kind of, like, Nerell's journey, or, like, Nerell maybe not feeling as helpful as she could.
Oh, yeah. To clarify, I think the idea of having her lose an arm and what it does to her character is a good one. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, I don't know, if I was writing this story, I might, like, have her do something risky that causes her to lose it.
Well, she jumped. Like, she went by, I mean, yeah, she kind of just, like, went on the other side of that door, as she always does, but mm-hmm. there were zombies on the other side of it that she didn't see in time.
Yeah, and part of it is like, hey, this world sucks and bad things can happen to you at any time.
Yeah, sure.
But some of it feels like it comes out of nowhere.
Okay.
More so with Lorath being like, just like, I'll give my head to the tree, and it's like, we could do anything else.
We could just look at the prophecy. It's like, oh, the jewel. Everyone calls Chaldeum the jewel of the desert. You could just look at it. You're a worldly person, Lorath. Like, you should probably know that. It would have been much cooler if he was just like, where is Lilith gonna go? Hey, maybe we should take a look at that prophecy that we've been, like, following this whole time. I mean, Lorath.
No, I must give my head to the tree.
Yeah, repeated must give head to tree. He repeatedly does sort of have a skepticism about the prophecy and being like, things aren't foretold and, like, man should make his own destiny and things like that. It's not really shown, though. And Loreth doesn't really have a moment with the prophecy where he's like, well, it just says, fuck it, giving, like, I'm desperate, I'm going to look at this prophecy. And I think that would have been a really cool moment. Because then it also would have been a moment of, could have been like, oh, now Loreth is actually a smart person, because he could have put together, like, when blood rains on the jewel, that, oh, Lilith is going to Chaldeum, right? Like, if right. It just takes a moment to
textual
look at
reading
it.
Here. We got to do textual reading, okay?
Yeah, he would have done that. But let's get into Act 6. There's still so much we got to talk about.
Yeah, okay, the knights are marching on the city.
Nayrel has a moment here where she asks us, before we march, how we're doing. And I like this one, where a character says something on his or her own free will, that it's kind of hard sometimes, but we're still just us getting... we're still just us. Like, we have the blood of Lilith, and it's still hard, but things get easier the more allies we have. And Nayrel finds that helpful. And it's like, hey, cool. That's what Diablo's trying to finally talk about, and it's actually successful in it.
Power of allies.
Power of allies and the power of humanity itself. You should hear the knights chant, she says. They're as eager for hell as she is. Good line.
Good. Very good line. Kind of pushes me towards the, like, man, I don't know that humanity actually knows how to deal with any of this. Seems like all the solutions people are coming up with are just bad ones.
Well, when humanity loses faith in itself, and sure, it starts to put its faith in heaven, it starts putting its faith in the conflict, and the conflict continues.
Sure.
Sanctuary was created as a refuge from it, and there's a lot of humanity that keeps looking outwards for a solution when it's not actually there. That's Lilith's whole point. If the world doesn't change, we'll always be stuck between greater forces that don't care about us, right? Maybe if Diablo 5, we take the fight to heaven and hell. Maybe we do it. I don't know.
I think that'd be really cool. But
yeah, I really like Nayrel at that moment. In the city, it is raining blood. Why is it raining blood? Who cares?
This town got fucked up.
Yeah, it's Chaldeum. Chaldeum never doesn't get fucked up. It somehow always rebuilds, and it's like the perfect place to have a city right atop the gates of hell. I don't know why that keeps happening, but people really love building establishment right over demonic forces.
Man, Loreth really should have figured this out.
But, well, he just really, again, must give head to tree. As the prophecy said, and the knights are penitent are slaughtering demons, cultists, and innocents alike. That's great. We run into Inarius himself, who is giving a terrifying speech again about the prophecy and him slaying Lilith and how it's all about him. And we, another Loreth moment, in another Loreth moment, run up to him and say, you're bad. And Loreth says, we have our own plan. Donan, put the stone out in the open for everyone to see.
and Donan's like, Inarius...
sure thing, boss. And then Inarius just uses telepathic or telekinetic magic to take the stone. He's like, thanks, idiots, and goes off chasing after Lilith. And we're like, why?
Which...
They didn't know we had that.
Well, and the actual resolution here, because here's the thing. Hey, spoiler alert, it doesn't matter. We just get the stone back a little bit later.
Yeah, but, like, why do it in the first place? He's clearly not an ally. That's result-oriented logic. I don't like that.
From a writing perspective, I don't know what having us lose the stone here and then get it back in, like, half an hour does.
Yeah, that's your point. It's like, what did it even do, right? It doesn't matter. Why did they have it? Like, it's just kind of a... Anyway, all it did was make me think that the Haradrim are stupid some more.
Well, which we already it's firmly established.
Which I affirm Haradrim are dumb believer. Oh, God. Deckard is too good for this.
And then, you know how we're going to wrap out this game? We're going to have an escort mission.
Hell yeah. We get some good moments between... good moments between Donan and Prava, where Donan is a little bit too incredulous that Prava still believes in Inarius. And I'm like, what do you think religion is?
She has followed this man her whole life.
Of course she has to place her faith in him. That's their whole deal. Also, she'll die if she starts denouncing him, because the Knights Penitent will just kill her. Because they'll just think Lilith got to her or something. Like, that's... I don't know. He's so mad about this, and I don't understand why. Yeah, so the escort quest... I mean, I have a note that it was actually pretty fun. It didn't last too long, though, before we got separated.
Yeah, it's not bad. You don't need to protect them is the thing, thank God. They don't have health bars you need to maintain or anything. They just, like, they don't move if you're not standing with them, which is the only annoying
part. Yeah, we get separated, and then we go through the walls, and we are beset by none other than, hey, remember when I said, why not both lesser evils? I was right. It's time to fight Duriel, the other lesser evil that Elias summoned. Fuck yeah. Duriel rules. Oh, he's dead.
He's dead. On difficulty, I will say maybe they did change something with like the expansion.
Was
I
it
found
harder?
It a bit harder.
Good,
because
obviously for me, like yes, I think they streamlined it a little bit.
Some of that hardness translated into a few of the more difficult boss fights having a lot of insta kill attacks, which I was not
That's
super
Blizzard.
Into. But
you know, it's a Devil Daggers moment.
I mean, insta kill combined with just
clutter. It's so frustrating, and that doesn't really go away for some of the Uber bosses.
Well, and like an insta kill combined with the equipment degradation hit me to a point where I was like, okay, I'm learning this fight, but every 7 times I lose, I have to go back and burn like 80k of gold or whatever.
It's not a perfect boss grinding machine, this Diablo game, but yeah, the difficulty has been streamlined. Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Things we also learn here, Nirella's also starting to think about, hey, should we actually use that soulstone on Lilith, or should we save it for Mephisto, who actually seems like maybe a bigger threat?
Yeah. And I'm like, yes, use it on Mephisto, because that's I know going into this, having played Diablo 2, soul stones are bad. They are not good. The prime evils came up with the soul stones and they tricked humanity into putting them in there, and I was like, yes. So I'm like, yes, finally do something stupid. But our characters don't know that, right? Anyway, yes. So I'm hoping we do that. But ultimately, what we do, well, we'll get to it. But ultimately, what we do, I think, is pretty satisfying.
It turns out all the temple people, we catch up with them, and they're dead. They're pretty much all just dead. Something happened, and there's corpses everywhere.
Yeah,
and Mother Prava is lying, bleeding out on the ground.
We touch some blood petals. We touch some blood petals and get a vision of what happened. And hey, what do you know? It's like the trailer they released at like BlizzCon.
Okay.
I'm not kidding you. Like, I was like, wait, I forgot about this trailer. Holy shit. They showed this, like the ending sequence at BlizzCon.
There's a lot I want to talk about in here.
It's a great trailer. It's a great scene.
Yeah. It's very much like, back when Blizzard was sort of like known for their cutscenes, it's very much of kind of that caliber, right? Of like, hey, 2007, very hard to find other studios who could make something that looked this cool.
Yes. And I think Blizzard still is in cutscene times.
Yeah.
Pretty
good. Extremely impressive.
Extremely good.
I want to describe this scene because a lot of stuff happens here. And in particular, the thing I'm most interested in is the conversation between Lilith and Anarius. Oh. But before we get there, what happens is we get a great scene of Prava marching forward with all of her knights, and then a great white light envelopes him as Anarius floats above. Mm-hmm. And then he lets out this big, loud, gentle ringing noise that causes the hordes of demons to all kind of fall backwards. And then they charge, and there's this massive battle with like hundreds of knights and demons all slaying each other. And Anarius is doing sick shit with his like light tentacles off of his back. And they've like the knights have these specially designed shields that they like ram their mm-hmm. spears through like Roman style, and it's a super cool fight scene. And then Inarius drives forward, touching down and throwing a spear directly at Lilith, but the spear is intercepted by a big demon. So he does a bunch of cool hand to hand combat with demons, mm-hmm. and Lilith like turns away all cool like and walks through a door. And then this is the scene where I start to kind of get on the Lilith side, at least, because here's the important thing to me. This is her talking to Anarius. I am presuming that like everything she is saying here is genuine. She is approaching him as an equal. It is not like she is like trying to manipulate some lesser mortal. The stuff that she expresses in this conversation, I think she actually feels.
And I think she actually still... I think she actually still feels love for Anarius, which is what makes Lilith such an interesting and compelling character, that she is the daughter of hatred who ended up either seducing or maybe genuinely loving an angel. Like the irony there is really, really palpable, because like she doesn't speak to him. It sounds like she's trying to convince him. She's speaking with a persuasive tone of voice and not a condescending one when she says what she does about the heavens not listening and about how, like, you know, about the future of the conflict's not going to end, and Heaven doesn't give a shit about the conflict ending.
And she seems to care about Sanctuary as this place that they both created. Mm-hmm. Like, her antagonism for Hell, her desire to not see Hell, and the powers of Mephisto and Diablo and the rest of them, like, overrun Sanctuary and exterminate all the humans or whatever, seems to be genuine. And she thinks that Anarius is a dumbass because he is.
He is a dumbass, and she sees him for what he is, that he is completely full of hatred, which is why Heaven is not... Because they just don't forgive that kind of thing, like, ironically, right? They're the law of order, and Anarius disrupted all of the order, and so they gave him up for imprisonment. And he was imprisoned by Mephisto for 2,000 years. He probably picked up a couple of things.
Yeah, no, she some great lines in here. She's like, hey, why did you kill our son? And he says, I made it right to satisfy the heavens. And her answer is, tell me, did they rejoice? No, they do not want you. And then he stabs her in the stomach. And then she says to him, we made a choice, and that they will never forgive, no matter what you tell yourself. Silence is their judgment. And again, Lilith appears to, one, genuinely not want Sanctuary to be destroyed by either side.
Mm-hmm.
Two, genuinely believe in free will as being important, both for herself and for, like, the humans that she has created.
I don't know about that one.
Like, she certainly seems to think that, like, the thing that she and Anarius did was exercise their free will and do things outside the bounds of what was allowed.
Yeah.
And that is why they're in trouble.
I think she believes to some extent the free will, but maybe not enough given what happens later when it comes to her attempting to not give us a choice.
Sure.
After that stabbing,
She stabs him back and says, you belong in Hell, which is great.
He goes kind of crazy after that realization. His spear went through Lilith and the prophecy's not foretold. Like, why the hell? Now it's like getting all in his head about why Heaven's not answering him. His shackles aren't coming off. The heavens are still not speaking to him. She stabs the hell right back out of him with his own spear, grabs him by the angel wing tentacles and rips them out of his shoulder blades. And the tower that they're in erupts in crackling light. The demons and the humans kind of all pause their combat to look at it, and then the demons sort of like turn back towards the human with toothy grins, and they're like, uh-oh.
Yep, humans are screwed.
Yeah, the humans get
run over
without their faith. They have no more faith because they all suddenly believe that their god's dead, and so
that's the end of that vision. At which point, my next note says, boy, that would have been cool to be present for.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, we find the eye again.
We do find the eye again. And what are we going to do with it?
The same shit we did before with the same result.
Well, you're going to like this because Lilith is exactly... We've learned from the Sightless Eye to find Lilith is that she is exactly where anyone with a couple of brain cells could have deduced. She's on her way to the Cathedral of Hatred, past the Sea of Fire, towards Mephisto. Right? Like, we all knew that, right?
Yes, where she's headed. We knew that,
mm-hmm. But we're going to sightless eye her anyway. And she's like, ugh.
Which just lets her mind prison us.
Yeah, so we get mind prisoned. This is it is a really cool sequence. It's very artfully done, as I like to say. Very abstract, very weird that we're in a prison of our own mind. She offers us a solution to be Sanctuary's greatest protector, and that she does believe that humanity is the future and is the solution to Sanctuary.
The people, they need a shepherd and a commander,
mm-hmm.
a commander shepherd, if you will.
Yeah, that's true. And so she's going to be that commander shepherd, but we can be there to protect her, basically. And our character is like, why don't I just do it without you instead? And she's like, well, have fun doing it from within inside the what's that portal? Hey, that's not allowed.
Again. Uh-huh.
I was told there was going to be no portals out of here. Those are the rules.
I mean, but again, she's like, hey, take my hand. Let's destroy Mephisto and fight for Sanctuary's preservation. And I'm like,
those are things that I want, but I don't want to do them with you because...
I guess. Okay.
I don't like the ways in which you do them. You know?
I guess. But and then Mephisto's like, hey, I'm freeing you so you can defeat Lilith. And it's like, one day we'll be enemies, but right now we need each other to defeat her. And it's like, oh, so we can team up with Mephisto to defeat Lilith?
Or we could maybe at one point break out of the dichotomy.
Sure, sure.
Maybe we don't have to choose the lesser of two evils.
I guess you're right. I guess when you put it like that,
like this game is. It's so direct in the...
I think part of what I'm struggling with is that there's just...
The evils are cool.
Well, that and also, it is so hard to picture what anything would mean for Sanctuary outside of this framework. Like, it's just like, everything is so dominated by these demons and these angels and the power they have over everything mm-hmm. that, like, it's hard to envision what it would mean to finally break the shackles of that completely and have some kind of, like, genuine human determined, like, world.
I don't know.
Anyway, we get out of our mind prison. Oh, right. Before we go in, and mm-hmm. I think it's telling that we skipped over this, Donut appears to just have gotten randomly.
Oops, no potions for his wound.
This is the other one where I was like, he could have like gotten mortally injured doing something heroic. He could have gotten mortally injured doing something stupid. He could have gotten mortally injured doing anything, and he kind of just got like grabbed by a pillar of skeletons.
That's right. Yeah, he was just like, oh, what's this weird monster pillar that's moving around? I shall take a closer look. All right. And then he just gets slashed and we're out of healing potions, I guess. I don't know. It tries to be what's it called? The vault, you know, with Horshaphon.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It tries to be that, and it fails so hard. I was like, all right, deuces, dude. Like
Donan dies, but Loreth forgives him for like nothing. The stuff between them or whatever.
Oh yeah. They had a lover's quarrel.
You know what happens now? You know what we finally do?
We make it to see Lilith.
We get somewhere ahead of her.
Oh, yeah. We actually make it. That's right. Because we get blessed by Mephisto. She's like, hey, I'm going to give you the VIP exclusive.
Hey, here's a portal. You just want to go to the Cathedral of Hatred?
Yeah. You just want to, like, I didn't want to do this, but we kind of have to. Come to the Cathedral of Hatred. And Nerel and I, we have a chat with Nerel, and we're like, all right, what do we want to do? And Mephisto very... very coyly is just like, I think you hold the future of Sanctuary in your hands and you should do what you will with it.
Mephisto is to clarify, a giant blood orb with a skull in it.
Yeah,
a
Mephisto shaped skull in it. That's really all I have to say. It's a Mephisto shaped skull. Really helpful there, but he's regenerating still in his cathedral, and we entrust the decision to use the Soul Stone to Nerel because we are a player character, and this is a Diablo game. There's no real. This is a roller coaster, and we are on it. It is not exactly a Mass Effect or anything like that. Even then, yes. So just before Lilith gets there, Nerel does decide to jam that Soul Stone right into Mephisto's definitely not willing skull. That he's like, yes. He's like in a zoo. Like he puts his skull up to the bubble. Like you definitely shouldn't put that soul stone into this glowing blue spot. Or the future's in your hands. It's a tough decision.
She just stabs it into him, and a bunch of blue lightning arcs down her veins. And
it's not a pretty sight. But we have, in fact, well, now we have. Mephisto imprisoned and
Nerel just like yeets out of there with it in a portal.
Yeah, she's like, all right, bye, I'm gonna leave before Lilith gets here. And then Lilith gets here and she's like, damn it. After all that, I guess really it really is kind of like it's kind of you don't watch Bake Off, do you?
Yeah, I watch Bake Off. I'm watching the new season.
It's kind of like when David Atherton won Bake Off after Steph got star baker four times and then just had a meltdown at the end. She is like, Lilith was Steph and just had like star baker the whole way. She was like, she's way like, ahead.
Oh,
and
had all this. Everything and was going my way. Are you kidding me?
She just fumbles it at the end because she gets like stabbed by an Arius and slowed down. Like, fuck. I don't think Steph said fuck. Maybe she did.
Honestly, off camera, who could say?
I don't think. Anyway. We have a fight with Lilith. My fight was a while ago, and so it was depressingly easy, but I'm sure yours was a little bit more intense.
I found this fight quite engaging. Again, worst part was that I died often enough to the insta-kill attacks and had to pay to have my gear repaired.
Yeah, you have to dodge. I know, but I've done the Uber version. I haven't finished it because it's like even more insta-kill attacks. But I know that you have to like get into the safe zone and dodge the skulls floating at you from the blood puddles and stuff.
All of that stuff was fine, actually. Like, I even, like, the insta-kill stuff that was like an AoE on the ground with, like, a wave type pattern, that was fine. Like, that was fair. Like, it's learned where the pattern is.
We've seen that shit before. I think Final Fantasy 14.
Maybe it was just I had bad gear or a bad build or something, but no. She also had this one sort of, like, stab slam attack that also would take me out of one.
Yeah, I guess you just gotta dodge that kind of stuff. But, like, for me, it's the skulls and the Uber version. There's so many of them, and I guess I'm not fast enough. I don't know. Maybe it is a gear skill issue. I don't know. I'm going to just keep going with it.
I think this was a cool fight.
It's a great fight.
And it had two phases. Finally,
I was like, yes, there's one fight that has two phases. And the second phase music is chilling. It's so good. I listen to that a lot. I listen to that song, the second fight song with Lilith. And I also listen to the theme of Karagar, the town from Skazglen. That shit with the like droning bagpipes and that shit slaps. The music is pretty good in this game. It's very different from Diablo's 1 and 2 because it's not Matt Uelmen doing it. It's, you know, some more up and coming hotshots with more modern sensibilities. But I think it's still good in its own right, and it fits the kind of more chaotic action-y sort of turn that Diablo has taken. But
her final lines here are,
yes,
I gave you free will and you squandered it, wasting it on a crusade you don't understand. You chose tyranny when offered freedom, a poor legacy for my gift. Which, look, whether
that
or
is
not,
some narcissist bullshit to say. First off, we offered you free will and we used it, like, we as a human being used it to secure a future for ourselves.
I think I'd be more okay with this if I had more of a sense of what, like, the proactive vision for the alternate way of doing things was.
Yeah. The way of doing things, yes. The way of doing things is by having allies and believing in the humanity of it all. The Haradrim are perpetuating the issue by way of keeping secrets and making trusting humanity with the knowledge of heaven and hell and spells and things like that, and the ways of the world. The churches are perpetuating it by defining what makes a person good and evil and then casting people as evil and causing more and more resentment and hatred over the course of its existence. And every church in Sanctuary is going to end up doing that. Church specifically, not just any system of beliefs. Like, the Druids were fine. You know, they believed in the world and the nature and the spirits themselves and things like that. It's like, believing in Sanctuary and believing in the world is the way to go. And the churches keep stepping over every single example of a society where that is integrated into the world of Sanctuary itself exists. It's like the swamp, like the Druids, like, I don't know, just everywhere.
Okay. I can go with all that. All sounds right.
So that is the problem. The conflict itself is the problem. However, the conflict feels itself, and the conflict is also what sells video games. So we have to keep it going.
Although, I'm only a little bit in the vessel of hatred. I am curious. They're doing some interesting stuff with that expansion as like a... Mm. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, I did finish the story. It's not too long. We're not going to talk all about the story.
No, I don't.
But we're going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about my impressions of it, and we'll talk about some of the community reactions and some of the systemic changes that they made to Diablo that I think actually make the game a lot worth really getting back into if you stepped away from it for a while. We talk more about like the new class and stuff and whatever as well. There's just a lot of really cool content to talk about with Vessel of Hatred. But as for the base story, did you have anything else? Because
a little bit of wrap up at the end. Nyrella has gone on her own way. Yosef, he's here to collect Lorath, but we immediately kill him.
Yeah.
Which I don't. Sad about Yosef because he saved us earlier.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know that I would have done that for like, yeah, we journeyed with Lorath as well, but I was like, man, do we? I mean, I guess not. I don't know. It's just this. I guess it just drives it home that, again, the Haradrim are also fueling the conflict, as well as the cathedral. Like, all three of those things, the way that those societies worked was not good for the world.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks that this world is like this, and it is extremely fickle. The moment somebody just gets mad or scared of something, Diablo's like, hello! Ah, spider! No! Don't be scared of that!
Seems like a bad place to live.
It's so shitty. There's some there's always like some side quests where like somebody is just like misplaced one of the fucking cups in the cupboard. It's like this world has the most nasty case of OCD and it will just swallow anyone whole who messes with their order.
Hey, here's a question. What does anyone in this world eat? Because there's no farms anywhere.
They just eat the goat men.
I guess they eat the goat men. Okay.
They eat guts and shit. It's not good.
Anyway,
or there's one side quest I just did where some people were like, oh, we didn't catch any fish. Guess we're having seaweed broth for dinner again tonight. No. I was like, oh no. Like, the little vignettes, it's similar to the Fallout games, I would say. The vignettes and the dungeons where you run in and you get the notes and people and those like little side stories.
Sure.
Those are the strongest kind of things. Like the Fallout vaults are the strongest little mini arc stories. So I would highly recommend getting into as many of those as you have time for.
Should we talk about, so there's a cutscene here that I got at the end of the game and then plays again at the start of the expansion. Should we talk about it now or next stuff? Time? Nyrell on the boat.
Yeah, we can talk about that later.
Okay.
It's the start of the expansion, so we'll talk about that. We've rambled on for long enough. But so far, I mean, I really enjoyed this. I think a lot of people were disappointed that we didn't side with Lilith because she made it a compelling argument, which is alarming to me because it was pretty clear to me that she was presenting us with a false dichotomy of that she was the lesser of two evils. And hey guys.
Sure. Okay.
Like, not that I'm saying we shouldn't participate in the systems that we have.
I think...
But we should strive for a better future.
I think all the stuff that you say about the actual path forward being like, you know, finding solidarity with each other.
Yeah.
All of that is true, and I can see it in here if I squint. I think I'd be interested in the game surfacing a bit more.
I think it surfaces it more in the side stuff.
Okay.
As well.
Side stuff,
but like
the side stuff, maybe I didn't play enough of it. Yeah.
We also have to be the kind of person that is invested in Sanctuary as well to even go to the side stuff. So if you're the kind of person that just wants to play this for the story and not exist in the world of Sanctuary, you're not going to have the stakes. You don't actually give a shit about Sanctuary.
That's fair.
You're not going to really want it to succeed. So yeah, you're probably going to be sad that we didn't take Lilith's side. But like, I don't think that's the point. I really enjoyed this story. It's not perfect. Some pacing issues, as we mentioned, even with like going out and getting distracted and stuff in the world of Sanctuary. But overall, the main game was pretty good, and I was really excited to get into Vessel of Hatred, which we're going to get into next week.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this podcast, thank you for having done so, and thank you for listening. We really appreciate that in and of itself. That supports us already. But if you want to support us even more, you can rate us on your podcast apps of choice, and you can join us on our Discord. Write to us via our email if you've got thoughts. If you have strong disagreements, I would love to see them. If you absolutely if you didn't see what I saw and you think that what I think is completely wrong, or what Alex thinks is, no one thinks that what you think is wrong. I don't know. I think it's just me because I'm louder and more opinionated, and
yeah.
I make leaps into I interpret things more.
You can be a little contrarian at times.
Yes. Yeah, I can. I choose to do so because I like things to happen.
It's fun to do sometimes.
Yes. It's very fun. So go ahead. Contrarian with me in the email or in the Discord. But I think
Mephisto actually might have had the right idea the whole time.
I think Mephisto, I want to get, you know what I want? Here's Ultimate Eiffel Tower, right?
Ultimate Eiffel Tower, sure.
Mephisto? Fisto. Speaking of Fallout.
That kind of Eiffel Tower. I thought you were just, I was like, what? That's a saying. I haven't heard that before, but sure. It's like a rhetorical device. No.
Yeah, no.
No, I guess you're right.
I did the hand motions.
Eiffel Tower.
I think
sure.
When I did the hand motions there, that really illuminated.
No, that sold it. Okay.
I really dropped forward what
do they call it? The Devil's Triangle?
Oh, yeah, I'd guess so. We need a third Fisto. Is there another one? Maybe we'll find one maybe in like Cement or something. Anyway, thank you guys so much for sticking through that, whatever that was. Our recap of Diablo 4, our finale ? Of that game. But then we're going to start a brand new game, Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred, next week. And we look forward to seeing you then. This has been another episode of Stormbones, and I've been your
boner of light, Jerome Barbatsis, joined by my co-boner of light.
No, really, I'm not going
really
by that.
Really had to force that one out. No, Alexander Hambrock.
Evening.
Say goodbye.
Bye.